You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Welcome to Between the Links with your host, Mike Heck.
Thank you, as always, Esther Lynn, as we welcome everybody to a brand new edition of Between the Links on MMAfighting.com, the ultimate hot seat for those in the MMA media space. Hope you're all having a great week. A very busy weekend in combat sports is now a thing of the past. And we're going to talk all about that. We're going to talk about big stories in the sport of mixed martial arts as well. Before we get into this whole thing, a lot of people reached out, commented, dare I say, demanded a rematch from last week's show because it was a hellacious battle. And that's exactly what we're giving you this week on the program. So let us introduce the combatants. You know them both by now. First, in unfamiliar territory, back in the challenger seat, the former multi-time defending Between the Links champion from MMAfighting.com, Mr. Jed Meshew. How are you, sir?
I am so glad the people spoke. I think we all know a great injustice was levied upon me the last time out. And, you know, I'm not usually a guy who's for the immediate rematch, you know, even in viciously unfair circumstances like befell me, but the people demanded it, and I'm here to correct that wrong. You know, I did what champions do. I crunched tape. I went back. I watched the film. I saw where I could improve. And you know, last time I left it in the hand of the judges. This time he's done in four. We're not going to OT. Sean, you're dead.
All right. And introducing the brand new Between the Links champ, set to make his first title defense. Coming off a very busy weekend covering combat sports, the world of professional wrestling from Fightful.com, the champion, Sean Ross Sapp. Sean, how are you, sir? By the way, we didn't talk about this off air. Roman Reigns is back. Big return at SummerSlam last night. That was really good stuff.
He is. It was actually pretty good stuff. It was a good weekend of wrestling, good weekend of MMA. I'm just going to steal Jed's thunder and say that I championed us talking more about Cam Soda. I did it. I said, Mike, we need to talk more about Cam Soda. Jed didn't want it, so we're not going to talk about it.
Wow. Just lies. That's the kind of fight we're about to have, just vicious lies. I can get in the mud with the best of them, Sean.
I'm so excited that was brought up before we even asked the first question. So, but let's get right into this thing. These two guys want to get after it verbally. So it's interesting because literally 20 to 30 minutes after we finished recording last week's show, we talked all about him for a good chunk early on in the program. Of course, John Jones timed it out perfectly, takes to Twitter and announced he was vacating the UFC light heavyweight title. He also said he planned on taking some time off before coming back. And then not long after that, it turned into, I just had a great conversation with the UFC. Negotiations are going to be at heavyweight for my next fight. So Dana White essentially confirms this news the next day after the Contender Series. And then he officially announces that Dominic Reyes will fight Jan Blachowicz for the vacant title at UFC 253 on September 26th. Jed, we begin with you. How did you react to this news that John is not only planning on the heavyweight move like we all figured he would, but he was giving up the title to make it happen?
I mean, my first reaction was, John Jones just can't let Daniel Cormier eat. Like, he just absolutely refuses to let that man get a news cycle. You know, I guess competitor in him. And the second one was, it's about damn time, you know, pardon the pun. He's got bigger fish to fry. They're up at heavyweight. I think it's just the best decision he could make right now. You know, if he stays at 205, he was supposed to be rematching Dominic Reyes, who I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about this, this evening as well. But I just don't feel that's a huge draw. I mean, people wanted to see the Gustafsson-Jones rematch immediately because that was fight of the year. Reyes-Jones was a fine fight, and I think Reyes beat him. But the only reason people want to see that rematch is really just to correct the wrong, like what happened with me last week. They want to see the true champion be the true champion. So other than that, though, I mean, that's not that interesting. Jan Blachowicz, I was always a fan of, you know, UFC 257, John versus Jan. I thought that would be fun, but that's not really a good reason to put on a pay-per-view event. So he just doesn't have anything else to prove at 205. And I think there is a little bit of truth to what Dom Reyes says when, you know, guys are getting faster, they're getting stronger, they're getting better prepared to beat John Jones. And so moving up to heavyweight, it's a new lease on life. He gets to come out, not look as flat and, you know, less interested as he has been the last few times out. And cross our fingers, knock on wood, we finally get to see John Jones versus Francis Ngannou. I think that's the only downside to this move here. Rumble Johnson is actually finally back in the UFC and going to be at 205. And
allegedly.
So, well, allegedly, but a little bit of bad timing there. But otherwise, this is all upside. I'm stoked about it.
My reaction, Sean, was you've got to be shitting me. Like, we just finished recording Between the Links. How dare you do this right now? But you know, how did you react to all of this?
I'm a big fan of people cleaning out their divisions, taking on every single person possible. I admire Amanda Nunes for doing that at two divisions. She's like, anybody that you can make a case for to throw at me, throw at me. John Jones has been there for a long time. I mean, he's beaten so many light heavyweights. Like, he's beaten half of the old middleweight division from like 7-8 years ago as well. Like, he's taken on anybody and everybody there is. And as mentioned, the best options for him were what? Dom Reyes rematch, Thiago Santos rematch. If he picks up a win, that's nice. Those were good fights, but were those the types of fights that I want to see John Jones in at this point of his career? 33 years old. He's not that young upstart anymore. He's 33 years old. His body is going to change naturally anyway as he gets older. I want the heavyweight fights, and I want the Ngannou fight. And I don't blame Dana White for thinking, you know what? Instead of just doing Jones versus Miocic, let me try to get this as Jones versus Ngannou down the line, because Jones versus Ngannou in a heavyweight title fight is one of the biggest fights I can possibly imagine. As for light heavyweight, I think it's not going to have that star power without John Jones, but it'll develop in time, and it will be a little bit different to not see Daniel Cormier and John Jones atop that division for the first time in what, 8 years? The first time in like 8 years that we haven't seen that. I'm all for it. It makes the heavyweight division better. It makes the light heavyweight division at least a little more compelling. So I love the move, and Jan was the only person that I looked at and said, okay, sure, that's somebody for John Jones.
Just to kind of build on what you just said, Sean, because, you know, we've seen fighters win multiple titles. We've seen them go up and down weight classes to take opportunities to fight for belts, win the belts, you know, use their name, their lineage to parlay it into super fights. Like, we've seen all this so many times. And look, like you said, John's been running roughshod at 205 for a long time. He's beaten almost every major contender at some point in this run, but it seemed like he had some unfinished business there with, you know, Blachowicz. We hadn't seen that fight yet. Most wanted to see the rematch with Dominic Reyes, like Jed alluded to, because a lot of people thought Dom won that fight. He's kind of betting on himself here and forfeited a world championship to do it. And his last few fights, although he got wins, you know, not the John Jones that we've come to grow and want to pay $65 to see. So after those last few fights, Sean, do you feel with where John is at in his career and his abilities to compete that the juice is worth the squeeze here? Do you feel like this gamble will pay off for him?
Yeah, I do. I mean, he's like the guy. He and Khabib are like the only guys you can look at and be like dominant at the top of their division and undefeated at this stage. I mean, the Matt Hamill fight, whatever, we ain't going to talk about that. But to me, it adds some more. It adds more intrigue to his fights. I mean, the last two fights that he's been in have had an awful lot of intrigue by the time they ended. But going into them, I think a lot of people didn't necessarily think that they would be as much. Now, going into his heavyweight bouts, I'm like, what's going to happen? Is he going to get tapped once on the jaw by a big boy and get knocked out? Like, that could happen. It's not likely that it happens, but it could happen, especially if that big boy is eventually Francis Ngannou. I just think that it's a world of opportunities and it's a world of fresh fights. I just hope that, like, by next week, we don't get another, hey, guys, I'm not going to be doing a heavyweight fight type of thing, because that seems like the trend of late. He starts talking to UFC. UFC doesn't want to pay him. He doesn't want to fight.
Jed, what do you think? Because I feel like the two names attached to John here at heavyweight are obviously Ngannou. That's the fight I think everybody wants to see. And then there's Stipe. And then after that, like, we don't hear a lot of chatter about John versus Alistair Overeem, or John versus Alexei Oleinik, or Derek Lewis, or Curtis Blaydes, like guys like that. We're not hearing that chatter. Are there other matchups besides Stipe and Ngannou that you're just like, man, give it to me. I want it.
Let's be clear. You're never going to hear chatter for John versus Alexei Oleinik. So if you've been holding that one dear in your heart, you can just let that go. I think we can put thoughts of that one to bed. Look, this is a two-horse race at the top, but then there's a world of opportunity after that. So I'm in kind of direct disagreement with Sean here. I think staying at 205 presents the biggest risk. Like, you talked about this being a gamble. I think this is the smart money move. Gambling is staying at 205, where he's looked flat, where Dominic Reyes beat him the last time out but didn't get the scores. Thiago Santos, with no knees, took him to a very competitive decision. You know, even against Anthony Smith, he won that cleanly, but it was starting to show shades of maybe John doesn't have that fastball anymore. But moving up to heavyweight, that's not going to be a problem with him. I mean, if he did fight Alexei Oleinik, are we pretending like that's going to be a competitive bout? There are only a handful of guys who are maybe difficult matchups for him at heavyweight. So, you know, for the casual observer, moving to heavyweight is the biggest risk he's taken, even though I think this is a really smart move for him, because I think John Jones beats the crap out of Stipe Miocic. I think that there are only one to two guys at heavyweight that really give me, you know, questions about the viability of beating John. I think just from a stylistic standpoint, John Jones always had a really good chin. So the idea of him going up to heavyweight and getting nuked seems really unbelievable to me, unless it's Francis Ngannou, because that man has the Denmark death touch. Like, he's just unbelievable in that regard. But Stipe is not going to jaw him once he's going to fall over. So I think he beats Stipe. The only ones that are questions for me are Ngannou because of the power, and Curtis Blaydes is very quietly just establishing himself as the best heavyweight in the world, other than Francis Ngannou, who he can't get past. So those are interesting contests for me. But even after that, I mean, you said Alistair Overeem. Like, isn't that kind of a really fun, weird fight Yes. that no one's anticipating, but would be great to watch? Like, I think that there's just a ton of opportunity. I think it's safer at heavyweight. Again, this is pure upside, a great move for him. He should have done it probably a year ago, but now's a great time too.
I would love to see Alexei Oleinik get into the clinch with John Jones and pull a standing Ezekiel choke out of nowhere. And everybody's like, okay, that's the guy that just beat John Jones. And then Alexei Oleinik promptly gets beaten by like Andrei Arlovsky or something in his next fight. Sorry, go ahead, Mike. I just wanted to get in my dim mock death touch of Alexei Oleinik as well.
I don't even have to respond, because it's the most ridiculous notion, like that could ever happen.
All right, Sean, true or false, John Jones will fight at heavyweight, make his heavyweight debut in 2020?
I think false. I think he'll wait until next year.
Jed?
Early next year.
Yeah, he's not going to end up doing it into this year, just because they're going to do Stipe Francis, which I think is perhaps dangerous, because if Francis loses that, you kind of lose the John Francis thing. But I think next year, and I'll go one more. He's not going to stay at heavyweight for that long. I think John goes to heavyweight. I think he does get the title, maybe defends it once. I think he fights both Francis and Stipe, maybe one other fight, you know, maybe an Israel Adesanya fight. And then he retires. I think we've only got about three more fights out of John left.
I would agree with that. And we're going to keep an eye on all this for sure. I'm super interested to see how this all plays out. I'm sure as soon as we're done wrapping today, there'll be some more John Jones tweets that we'll talk about next week. But much like the rest of this rematch for the BTL strap, I'm fascinated by this whole story. And the first point of the matchup goes to the challenger, Jed Meshew. Were you nervous when I said the challenger because you thought you were the champion?
No. I knew. Back on the board. You know, I wanted you to say the true champion instead of the paper champion, but point's a point. I'm happy to have it.
Well, let's stick with the 205-pound division in the sport, because as soon as John vacated the title, the narrative surrounding the Bellator 244 main event between Ryan Bader and Vadim Nemkov, at least from Scott Coker's side of things, was that the winner of that fight becomes the best light heavyweight in the world. Not in Bellator, but in the entire world. Bader talked it up. Bader agreed with it. Then he ended up losing the title to Nemkov via an impressive second round TKO. That was pretty devastating stuff. But, you know, this has been a discussion point throughout the weekend with fans, with Coker. Even Dana White, at the post-fight press conference on Saturday, was asked 5 or 6 questions maybe about Bellator, which was different. I mean, you might hear a Michael Chandler question, but to have names rifled off to Dana White from the Bellator roster, that was something we haven't really seen before. Sean, we're going to start with you. With John Jones seemingly putting his 205-pound days behind him, who's the best 205-pounder on the planet right now?
Who is the best 205-pounder in the planet? I'm going to say right now, at this moment, probably Dom Reyes. Vadim Nemkov is very good. I love that. I love his run in Bellator specifically over the last 2 years. But also, I got to look, and there were some extenuating circumstances, obviously, but there's a guy sitting at number 6 in the UFC's light heavyweight division that has a win over Nemkov in the last few years. Again, extenuating circumstances. They were both very, very young. I'm not even going to try to pronounce Jiri's last name because I will butcher it on the air. But yeah, I think it's probably Dom Reyes, but man, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. I'm going to say Dom Reyes right now.
Jed, who's the best light heavyweight on the planet now that John Jones is apparently a heavyweight now?
I mean, I think the answer is Dominic Reyes, because Dominic Reyes is the best heavyweight, light heavyweight on the planet, even if John Jones hadn't retired. He beat him, like, just straight up. I know the scorecards didn't go his way, but you check the MMA decisions on that, a majority of people think Dom won that fight. I thought it was pretty clear. I thought really you had to kind of squint your eyes to hope that John Jones won that there. And that's just what it is. He beat him, and he kind of deserves the credit for that. If you really are being a stickler to hold to that, to, you know, records determine, then it's open, man. Vadim Nemkov has been on a really good run, but at the same time, is that the same quality of opposition? Thiago Santos, I think, if you're just going by record, probably has the best argument in that case, because his run to a title shot at 205 was better. And people forget, Dom Reyes beat Chris Weidman. That's a middleweight who has lost like 7 fights in a row by knockout before his last one. Like, it's not the same. So it kind of depends on how you want to judge it here, but give me Dom Reyes, because I think he beat John Jones the first time. So I think by default, that makes him the best 205er in the world.
Jed, back to you. Let's take Dominic Reyes out of the equation. Who is it? Is it Jan? Is it Thiago? Is it Nemkov? Like, who's the next guy?
If you take Dom out, I think it's Thiago. Like, I mean, Thiago, he didn't just beat Jan. He knocked Jan out. So Jan's gone. Like, if that's a head-to-head, Thiago's loss at light heavyweight is a very competitive decision to John Jones when he did not have knees. Like, that's his run at light heavyweight is fairly small, not enormous, but it's good enough wins. And we're just talking about such a curious division. Like, even Glover Teixeira has got like good enough wins to be in that conversation. That's partly why I think Jones moving up is such a good choice. Like, 205 is interesting now. It is interesting. If Bader had beaten Nemkov, I would be here to tell you that Ryan Bader deserved that title at this juncture, but he didn't. And because Nemkov has 2 losses in the not that distance past, I think that makes him a little further down on my list. So give me Thiago Santos if I can't have Dom Reyes.
I do want to touch on this, Sean, because you mentioned it in the first question. Jed just sort of mentioned it as well. When it comes to this division and John vacating, the fact that things have been shaken up a bit at 205 is pretty cool right now. Like, we're like, all right, now we get some fresh matchups, and fresh matchups are always a good thing. But this is the old cliche: be careful what you ask for, you just might get it. In the long term, is this ultimately John moving up and shaking things up here? Is this ultimately a good thing for the division because we can have these conversations? Like, what is this conversation going to be like 12 to 14 months from now? Are we still going to be talking about fresh matchups and being excited about it? Or do you think we're going to see some gaping holes at 205?
I think there'll be a little bit of both. I think you'll run into a situation where, as we call it in pro wrestling, people get 50-50 booked a lot. You'll see a lot of top 15. It's like win-loss, win-loss. And one of two things will happen. You'll have a couple of dominant challengers who emerge, or you'll have the UFC scrambling to find anybody they can that wins 2-3 in a row, or two other last three to throw into a title situation because it's so competitive. There are a lot of people that have popped up, like Johnny Walker, who a little too much too soon. You've got Ankalaev there. You've got Rakic there. There's some names that I look at and I'm like, all right, they could emerge. And then people like Krylov, who somehow still end up winning fights, and I'm not sure how. Glover Teixeira, who seems like at times he gets old and then all of a sudden he just beats everybody and he just hangs around. Like, I actually agree with Jed that there's a real discussion about maybe Glover Teixeira would be there if not for Dom Reyes.
He's on a 4-fight win streak that are good wins in the division.
Like, yeah.
And I doing great right now.
And I counted him out for a lot of them, except for the Krylov fight. I thought he was going to be Krylov, but he was beating really good people. It's just a matter of hashing it out and seeing who wins and keeping this division active. And I think that's important. You need active competitors, and the amount of fresh competitors or relatively fresh competitors here, I think will help out a lot. I do think that you want to highlight this division by putting them on highly trafficked shows. Like, some of these top 15 fights need to be the co-main event of like a really good TV main event, or maybe third from the top in a really good pay-per-view main event to highlight them, though.
See, Sean, you've made a critical error here, because in 18 months, there's going to be a dominant champion. And his name is Anthony Rumble Johnson. He's coming back. He's going to be mini Ngannou and knock everybody out. And there's no Daniel Cormier or John Jones to wrestle him into submission. He is just going to punch people in the face. They're going to go boom, and it's going to be awesome.
I will never fall for that again after the way that he showed up in Buffalo. Never. That was the most uninspired crap I have ever seen. And I think deep down he knew it, because I think that he could have had like an interim title fight right before that. I think he knew he was done when that fight fell out the first time. That's why he was like, no, I don't want an interim title fight. Why would I want that? And he laid down on his way out. He did the job for Daniel Cormier. He jobbed his way out. And I don't believe he's going to make weight.
What are you talking about deep down? He all but said that he just didn't care. On the surface, he tried to wrestle Daniel Cormier instead of punching him in the head. Yeah. He obviously didn't care.
I want to see him against Kevin Burns again.
Ooh, at 205 or
the rubber match.
Wow. One name I didn't think I'd hear today or next week or any other week we record this show. Jed, let me ask you this. What's more likely to happen? John Jones versus Dominic Reyes 2, or John Jones versus Rumble Johnson? Or does none of these fights ever happen?
I think Rumble Johnson is actually fairly likely to happen. I mean, Rumble's fought a heavyweight before. I think there's a part of Rumble that was coming back. You know, I mean, the real reason everybody coming back for that paycheck, got to get them checks, son. But beyond that, I think he thought maybe he could get a title shot that was finally there. And I think that still has interest. People will still care. Maybe they might not care if John goes and beats Francis. But, you know, if that fight never ends up happening, Rumble's fought at heavyweight. I could easily see him being like, all right, John, you need to get your feet wet at heavyweight. Let's you and me just fight up there. No belt on the line. Let's just do this.
Yeah, and I'm not convinced that Rumble Johnson will make the weight. It's always a concern. If he fought at heavyweight, I feel like he'd find a way to make it interesting about whether or not he's going to make weight or not. I don't know how, but that's just the nature of his fights. They have stuff to build off of from people wanting that fight so long ago and it almost happening, but it didn't. And I think at heavyweight, that's pretty good. Honestly, I wish they could talk Rumble Johnson into fighting John Jones. If it's not going to be a title fight that John Jones is in, which it probably will, he'll probably get the winner of Stipe and Ngannou, then I would love for them to run this back because it's not too ambitious. It's effectively a light heavyweight fight at heavyweight, and people can see what these two look like there.
Or we could just do Rumble versus Ngannou, because
I wouldn't hate that either.
Come on, Rumble versus Ngannou.
Or hear me out, Rumble versus Kevin Burns 3. I win the round.
Heavyweight this time, though.
Yes. Open or Kevin Burns versus John Jones. And then we can see whose eyes truly are the toughest, because they're all getting gouged out.
This is the best game ever. We're going to make some history here on Between the Links, because I don't think this has happened before, where we had one player win rounds one and two. Shed Bashu.
Oh, you
takes
changed
a 2-0 lead.
I thought you changed your mind and took the first two rounds from him. Okay. No. You are the host. You can do that.
I could if I wanted to. But
was
Jed's
it the Kevin Burns? Was it the Kevin Burns pitch? Did that lose it for me?
It made it really close. It made it really close.
I thought I lost it when you had the Kevin Burns. Like, damn.
It was close. It was close. But we'll see if Jed can keep this going. One more in the can. He gets the automatic win, but I feel like Sean's going to get better as time goes on. Let's see if Jed can keep up that cardio, that momentum here.
Back against the wall.
But let's move ahead to this past Saturday night. And we're not talking about Cam Soda, even though that both of these gentlemen would love to talk about it.
We're not talking yet.
Yeah. UFC on ESPN 15 went down before the Cam Soda wildness began. A wild, wild card. There were lots of shakeups. It's one of those events where there are more changes than actual fights that went down. We had a very good main event at 135 pounds between Frankie Edgar and Pedro Munhoz. Edgar gets the nod via split decision, but there have been a lot of opinions on how that fight was scored and how people judged it at home. I'd say it's much more in the Munhoz camp than the Edgar camp. And honestly, this is my opinion. It's one of those fights where I ain't mad at pretty much any score you come up with unless you drop a 50-45 on me. Jed, we're going to begin with you. Who won that fight, in your opinion, and why?
I mean, I think Pedro Munhoz won. I think it was closer to 49-46 Munhoz than it was 48-47 Frankie. Look, Frankie Edgar's just one of those guys, man. He's got a career of winning questionable decisions, but also losing bad decisions. So I guess it all evens out in the wash in the end. I mean, twice he beat Benson Henderson, but didn't get his hand raised. And then he, of course, just straight up stole the lightweight championship from BJ. We all forget because of the way their subsequent fight went. But, you know, that first decision was wretched that he won there. And I think last night was a bad one. You know, I think Pedro Munhoz clearly did the most damage, which is supposed to be the end all be all of everything. I think he controlled the fight, not just by coming forward, but by dictating how the engagements were done. You know, Frankie threw a lot in combination and that ended up winning him rounds. But you saw every time Pedro was hitting him, sticking him, pumping that jab out, leg kicking him, Frankie was reacting, whereas Pedro just kind of took the shots Frankie had to give and kept coming forward. To me, it was super clear. I was doing the play-by-play for MMA Fighting, and I ended up scoring the fifth round for Frankie, but I could have easily given that one to Pedro as well. I think the only round Frankie clearly takes is the second, where he adjusted to what Pedro was doing in round one, used wrestling a little more, but to me, I don't see it, man. I feel like you've got the veteran blinders on. People just love Frankie and they want him to do well. They want him to win. And I think he looked sensational, but I think he lost the fight.
John, what do you think? Do you agree or do you disagree?
Yeah, I agree. I had this for Munhoz. 1, 3, and 4, very clearly for Munhoz. Edgar, probably the most clear cut round, even though I had those three clearly for Munhoz. I thought second round was the most clear cut. And the fifth, if either way that went, I would have been okay with it. But yeah, I'm in the 49-46 Munhoz camp as well. Munhoz was more active. He engaged a lot more. Now, Frankie Edgar did show me on that night that he is still one of the best counter strikers in the world. Like, if Munhoz wouldn't have pushed forward so much, then there wouldn't have been nearly as many opportunities for Edgar. But even when those opportunities happened and Edgar would crack Munoz, he didn't sell it, so to speak. It didn't seem like he was in a ton of danger or anything like that. And Munoz showed me a lot more here than what Edgar did, in that I believe that he's still one of the best counter strikers in the world. Because I went into this fight believing that, even after he had lost 3 of 4 and got knocked out by Korean Zombie. Like, I believed that anyway. I also agree with the point that it's a lot of the veteran favoritism, so to speak. And a lot of people they do want to see Frankie Edgar do well. I just want to see the right decision read is what I want to see. That's all I care about, is seeing the right decision read. And, I think it should have been Munoz. I really think it should have been Munoz.
I actually scored it for Frankie watching it Saturday night, but I was doing multiple things at the same time. I gave him, two, I agree, was the clearest round. I thought 2 was a clear round for Frankie. 3 was a very clear round for Pedro. Those are the 2 most clear and concise rounds, at least in my eyes. And then the other 3 were close, and I can't hate you either way for scoring it for whoever. Frankie gets the win no matter what. So unfortunately, he gets the win whether you scored it for him or not, in another weight class. And now he's officially in the mix at 135. Sean Ross Sapp, how do you book him? What do you do with them? What fight makes sense to follow it up?
At 135, like, okay, anybody like that has that type of cachet, I'm going to say Dominic Cruz would be fun, just because they can headline an ESPN card with that, or they can throw it on pay-per-view. Like, that's the one that stands out. But it's weird because Dominic Cruz doesn't fight, and now he's got, like, more interesting fights as a result of him not log jamming that division by just rematching the same 2 people over and over again. There are a lot of interesting fights for him there. I don't think you want to give Frankie Edgar anybody really in the top 10, right? Well, okay, top 5 right now, unless it's going to be somebody that you're fully prepared for him to get beaten up by. Like, I think Sandhagen probably beats him. But that, I wouldn't hate that matchup either. It depends on what the UFC wants, and I'm trying to think of this from the UFC's perspective. And from the UFC's perspective, they probably want to keep Carton Frankie out there until they can't anymore, just because he was able to headline a show when he had lost 3 of his last 4 fights. So from the UFC's mentality, that's at least how I look at it.
Jed, what's the fight next for Frankie?
So you said, unfortunately, he won. I think this is the best outcome. Like, I firmly believe Pedro Munoz should have won that fight. I think Frankie winning that fight is the best outcome, because now he is in the mix. The problem is, what do you want to do for him? What's your intention with Frankie Edgar? Because I think the intention is to give him a title shot. He's not going to win. Doesn't matter who's holding the belt. He's not going to get it. But the idea is, whoever is holding that belt, you can build him off of, you know, build off that name, that Frankie Edgar's a former lightweight champion down at bantamweight. So how do you get him to that? It's a bit tricky to book him. You could do the Sandhagen fight. They were booked at one point in time. I know Sandhagen's currently fighting Rice, and see how that shakes out. But I get Sandhagen beats him. Any of those top guys are going to beat him. But Sean nailed it. Dominic Cruz, like, that's the fight they should have booked when he came down. That's a, you know, legend versus legend fight. 2 guys competing around the same weight class for a long period of time. If Dom, when he was champion, if he had knees that worked and weren't perpetually made of paper mache, maybe he moves up and fights Jose Aldo. You're not going to run an Aldo trilogy down at bantamweight. Yeah. So Dominic Cruz, that's it. Like, that's the fight. And if Frankie beats Dominic Cruz, now he has 2 top 10 wins, and you can sell him as the title contender. Like, yeah, you're going to have to jump somebody, Marlon Moraes maybe, but you can sell him as the next guy to build the name off of for Aljo or for Peter Yan, whoever comes out of what, knock on wood, is actually now booked, or Dana is at least admitting that's the fight we're now going to get. So I think that's it. Dominic Cruz, 100%.
What about Munoz, Jed? What do we do from here? Because most people thought he won. I think on MMA Decision, it was 17 out of 20, maybe 16 out of 20 at worst. You can't imagine he drops that far down on the rankings, maybe a spot, just because Frankie's got to get put into the rankings. So I can't imagine him dropping too much. Do you just book him with like a Rafael Asensio and run that one back from his debut in the UFC? Or do you give him one of these young, hungry, surging up and comers?
Well, so he's on a 2-fight losing streak, and that makes him, you know, you're probably not trying to push him up towards a title fight. He doesn't have a high profile. He's lost two in a row, even though he should have beat Frankie. So I think giving him to a young up-and-comer makes a lot of sense to build those people up, be a litmus test. You know, I think Rob Balashvili would make some sense there. That fight's okay. I love Rafael Sanzao. Nobody has ever thought I should book Rafael Sanzao to fight this guy. It's not a thought that comes into your head because of the style of fighting. So I think give him a young guy. If you're not, give him Jose Aldo. Maybe he can build something there. But I think Marab Dalashvili is actually probably the best choice. I mean, maybe Marlon Vera, Cheeto coming off that win could be fun and interesting as well. But either of those two guys makes a lot of sense to me.
Sean, what do we do? Pedro Munhoz versus blank.
Stole my thunder there with Marab and Jose Aldo, but just for the sake of saying something different, I would prefer Aldo if a big name, Marab Dalashvili if it's somebody that they want kind of as an up-and-comer, but I don't hate the idea of like a Uriah Faber either, because it's like 1A, 1B there for Faber, Aldo, and some of these matchups there. There are a lot of interesting like veteran matchups to make in this bantamweight division, because everybody has just decided to end their career at bantamweight. It's so weird to me that like we get all these fighters that are like, I'm going to stop cutting weight. And you got like Aldo and Edgar that are like, no, we're going to go down to 135 and chill out there for a while in this pretty competitive division that has some good prospects. I think that Faber would be an interesting one, especially with him coming off of two losses, him being Munhoz and Faber coming off of a loss against Peter Yan.
All good picks. That's why 135 is one of, if not my favorite division in the UFC. It's just so loaded with talent from the top 15 all the way down to the top 50. And we're going to another question. Sean Ross Sapp on the board. Don't call it a comeback, ladies and gentlemen. As we look ahead to this Saturday night. This is a much different looking card than this past Saturday's, that's for sure. There's been a couple of shakeups, but still some interesting matchups. Anthony Smith is back against Alexander Rakic. Robbie Lawler is back, taking on Neil Magny. Pretty solid first two fights there. But Jed, how solid is this card as a whole? What are we grading? I think we're going with UFC Vegas 8 this time around. What are we grading this event on paper here?
I mean, this card's just not good. Sorry. Like I mean, to be fair, I said that about last weekend's card, and last weekend's card, I hate it when Dana White is right, because then he'll just, you know, use that forever. But it was one of those times where, you know, yeah, even if the fights don't look good on paper, they can turn out to be awesome. Last weekend's card was amazing. It was super fun. It was the second best event of the weekend behind Cam Soto. And really nothing was ever going to beat Cam Soto. But I mean, this weekend, your main event, you know, we didn't talk about him a lot, but I guess Alexander Rakic is in the conversation for, you know, the best 205er. I know he's got a loss, but split decision that really, really is just a robbery there to no time Volkan Oezdemir. So you got that. And Robbie Lawler is awesome, and so it hurts me that he's fighting probably the least fun fight he could ever could against Neil Magny. Like, it's just not great. Why can't we book Robbie Lawler right? Robbie Lawler, Anderson Silva, put them together. It's the simplest thing in the world, and I feel like I'm the only person who recognizes it. Just do that. It's way better than Pettis versus Anderson Silva. Make that fight happen. I will be there with bells on. I don't care about Neil Magny fighting Robbie Lawler. Very good. Whatever. Give me the Spider versus Brutal Bob Law. Let's go.
Wow.
I would love that.
To break your heart. I mean, you probably know this by now, Jed, but Anderson's like last fight is booked against Uriah Hall in October. What do you think of that?
Last fight. That's what Dana says is going to be his last fight. Like, come on. Is Anderson,
think he's got more?
Go out on a Uriah Hall probable loss? No, he doesn't have the ability to quit. So book him against Robbie Lawler. Like, this is so simple. It's so easy.
That's October for Anderson Silva. Maybe he's got more left. I think he's got two fights left in his deal, so we could still see two more for the Spider. But looking at this Saturday, Sean, what do you think?
So sucks. It's horrible. It looks bad. Like, I look up and down the card. All due respect to Robbie Lawler. Okay, he's I'll be interested to watch him fight just because he's Robbie Lawler. But other than that, it's like, okay, I want to see what happens to Ankalaev. I want to see what happens to Rakic. That's really it. As I look up and down this card, those are the only things that I'm going to look at here. You've got a 10 fight card and there are like people on here that have lost three in a row and probably shouldn't even be here. But due to the circumstances, they're still around. I would grade this on paper as a D plus. And if it didn't have the UFC banner on it, it would probably be sitting at an F. It looks like an M1 global card or something. It looks really bad. Anthony Smith versus Rakic, good fight. Kutalaba, Ankalaev, yeah, okay. And then you got Magny, probably going to beat Robbie Lawler. At this point, I agree with Jed. I would have Robbie Lawler on the Legends Tour, so to speak. I mean, when you do that, somebody's got to win. So at least you can justify that, and you won't have Robbie Lawler with like 17 red streaks on his Wikipedia consecutively.
Jed, is there a Ed Herman, Gerald Beerschart type of fight on this card that sticks out to you?
I mean, look, this card is bad. Just straight up, it's bad. At the very least, most people have Wikipedia pages on it. So that's an improvement from last weekend on paper. Like, you have some maybe interesting sides of fights. Like, I don't know, Alex Caceres, Giga Chikadze. That could be fun to a point, but if you're looking for the deep cut here, for the thing that's bad, but I will enjoy it because it's bad. I mean, just, you got to make your home and live in middleweight, and Alessio De Chirico and Zach Cummings, who have both been on roster for, it feels like a decade at this point. They're finally going to fight. And one of those fights that would be like, oh, I'm randomly playing EA UFC 4 and I'm choosing to be Zach Cummings so I can try and make a run with the lowest rated fighter on roster that I can play with. And then my first fight is against the other lowest rated guy on roster. So that one's maybe kind of fun just because of that. But I know this is a bad Bellator card. It's certainly not a good UFC card.
What do you think, Sean? Is there a firework fight that no one's really given enough love to? I know you two aren't given a lot of love to much on this card, but is there one that sticks out to you? Be like, this one could be pretty good under the radar.
Alex Caceres, anytime he fights, maybe. But other than that, no, I don't think so. I think this show's going to suck in theory and in execution. I think it's going to be terrible. Like, I was spoiled. Like, I didn't get to watch this past week's show until this morning. And I was like, damn, nine fight card. This is a breeze. Like, in wrestling, we complain about 7-hour WrestleManias. That's every Saturday in the UFC. Like, so to get through a nine fight show and to have so many finishes and quick finishes, I don't think we're here on that this Saturday. I think, I just think it's not going to be a good fight. I think there'll be a couple good finishes and that'll be about it.
I think the first fight on the card is like the most action-packed fight. Well, Sean Brady and Christian Aguilera.
So what we're all saying here, fans watching this, is keep it locked to MMAfighting.com. If you don't want to miss the action this week at UFC in Vegas. 8, whatever it is.
I mean, like, yeah, I look at that and I'm like, all right, Mallory Martin might finish Hannah Cyphers quick. Sean Brady might win pretty quick. It's just,
Hannah Cyphers is low-key tough as nails.
She is. She is. I like her. I do. But I think Mallory Martin's better.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's not – no disrespect to Hannah Cyphers. That's not, like, terribly difficult to
– Yeah, I know.
Cyphers came in against Dern and was tooling Dern up for, like, a minute before she stopped.
Yeah, I think that eventually she'll be really good. I just unfortunately believe that there's probably – an Invicta run in her future, and then she'll win two fights there and be immediately re-signed to the UFC.
You got to keep that 580 person roster filled so we can have 13 fight cards every weekend. Can we talk about that? Why? Like, why are the fight cards like this? I just don't understand. I genuinely have no clue why we can't have 8 fight cards every weekend. It just seems so much better.
I know. And now we still have what, 5 more contender series episodes, so there's at least 15 more contracts, maybe 20.
Yeah, the way still to come this year,
And all of them are getting fights already. Like almost every single fighter who's gotten a contract in the Contender Series has their first fight booked already. It's wild.
Crazy.
Craziness. One thing we've talked about, I don't know if we talked about it on the show or we talked about it off air last week, but the grassroots of MMA and the UFC and the storytelling and booking is very deeply rooted in the professional wrestling world. And I look at, you know, it's kind of like the old ECW days where you watch the show and it builds up to like either an ECW arena show or their pay-per-view. I feel like these shows build up to September 26th. Like, we want people to spend $65 on Israel Adesanya versus Paulo Costa. Like, that's what we want to do. We want to get new fans in there. So Sean, since this is kind of your world, the UFC has announced the main events for the three subsequent events after this Saturday heading into UFC 253. I think the one that sticks out to everybody's mind is Covington versus Woodley on September 19th. But how do you feel the UFC is doing, I guess, laying down the groundwork for September 26th, getting people invested in the product in order to try to sell them a pay-per-view on September 26th?
Well, what's the main event for the 5th? Is that Overeem and Sakai?
Sure
all
is.
Right. All right. Well, that's being sold on the back of Alistair Overeem and them hoping that he'll throw his fist at somebody and knock him out. And you got Pereira on that show. So I think there are at least some things on that show that will be interesting. Thiago Santos, Glover Teixeira. I don't have a problem in the damn world with that main event. Give me
that's
that.
That's all heavyweight in the world right there. That right there is the best light heavyweight in the world.
And yeah, I wouldn't argue that at all. There's some good fights on that show that I think could be very exciting. I think that will be a really good show. Tyron Woodley versus Colby Covington has all the makings of being one of the most boring fights in UFC history. But the press conferences should at least have something notable instead of me standing there in front of a video screen for an hour just typing out what Dana says and not caring about what anybody else says. There'll at least be some things there. They've got Cerrone and Nico Price on that show. I think that those cards have much more, any one of them have more to them than what this weekend's does. So I think they've done fairly well actually building up to what is UFC 253 and that really great main event.
What do you think, Jed? Do you think we've laid down some seeds here to grow a beautiful flower that is September 26th?
Well, I do think that cards are getting better up there just because it's such a low bar we're at right now. And, you know, if you know, the gods hadn't intervened to remove Gerald Meerschaert from Fight Night 177 against Ed Herman, then we'd really be on track to build something, because that fight takes you off like a rocket ship, obviously. We've talked about how good that fight is. So other than that, most of these cards are also not that good. They're top heavy, at least. Their top fights are better. And, you know, Overeem Sakai is definitely not as good as the next step up. You know, Santos Teixeira for the title of best light heavyweight in the world. And then Covington Woodley. So I guess they are incremental steps here, but the rest of the cards are just not good. There's too many people. It's just bad. Like, it's fine. And I'm an addict. I'll be watching every Saturday. Right there doing play-by-play and thinking about the decisions I've made in my life to lead me to this point. But, you know, I don't think you're getting new fans through any of this.
Yeah, too bad. You know, MMA fighting, we're big fans of Ryan Hall, so we wish him a speedy recovery because he's not fighting this weekend. That was actually an interesting matchup with him and Lamas, but now we're going to see Bill Algeo make his UFC debut on Saturday. So the guy who lost to Brandon Loughnane on the Contender Series.
Yeah, dude, that kind of booking also I know that Lamas probably needs to fight, but just putting him in against a no-namer on short notice, kick that can down the road a couple of weeks and book Lamas against somebody else who will step in that is not a debutante. Like, it's nothing good is happening for them as of late.
So enjoy the card on paper now, because chances are it's not going to look like that come Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We're going to have some shuffling of the decks, probably some new fights.
I hope so.
After the weigh-ins.
It could only be an improvement.
Oh, man. Speaking of improvements, Sean Ross Sapp has delightfully improved. And you know what that means? That's, we are tied. It's knockout round time. And I am so excited for this question because neither of these guys know it. So if you're new to the show, the knockout round, You'll hear the question. Each competitor is going to have 60 seconds to give their response. After those 60 seconds are done, we will throw it to the judge, the man who calls it right down the middle, E. Casey Lydon. He will render the final decision, and we will crown a champion, either Ann Still or Ann New. The drama is just unbelievable, so do not go anywhere. Sean, you are the champion. With that, you get to decide whether you want to answer this question first or last. And I'm going to preface this by saying I think this question is right up both of your alleys, and I cannot wait to hear the responses.
Oh, I'm going first.
Oh, Sean going first.
I have an infinite number of takes about what I assume this question is going to be on, so go first. I got plenty. I got ammo to spare.
All right. Well, I think we're going down a road in a way that Jed wants to go down, but we're going to turn it on its ear, so to speak, because yes, Cam Soda happened on Saturday. We had lots of different kinds of combat sports action. We had lots of gimmick matches, so to speak. And this is, again, this is very pro wrestling like in turning it into combat sports. So it got me to thinking probably about a half an hour before we hit record here. What if the UFC were to put on an event like this and they were able to put together the ultimate gimmick match, Cam Soda style, for the Octagon? If they could pull it off, what would you want to see, Sean Rossap?
Davison Figueiredo against Stefan Struve. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Davison Figueiredo against Stefan Struve. When I got UFC, the video game, the first fight that I fired up was Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson against Stefan Struve. It took me 8 times to beat him. I would be all for it. I would love to see a tag team grappling match or a fight within a UFC cage. I think that could be just batshit crazy, insane, and something that they would never do, but I would love for them to do it. Give me night fights for all I care. Load them up in armor and have them swing weapons at each other. But I think it would be the best flyweight in the world against the biggest guy on their roster. That's what I want to see.
Wow. 12 seconds to spare. Sean Rossap going Figgy versus Stefan Struve. Jed has a look in his eye. I can't really read it at this point. I don't know if he's happy about this question, if he's sad about this question. I don't know.
I get to talk Cam Soda. I'm thrilled.
All right. Before we let you answer, in like 2 sentences, describe Cam Soda for those who didn't get to watch it.
It's like if your friends put on an MMA show in their backyard, but had decent production values, and it's just hilarious. It's the funniest thing.
Okay. Well, now we're going to take that idea and that concept and do it in the Octagon, where they have their own arena. They have their own production. They have all sorts of fun stuff on ESPN. With that being said, Jed, what are we doing? What's the ultimate gimmick match? 60 seconds starts now.
Look, I get where Sean's coming from. It seems fun to do that. But the reality is you got to know your gimmick matches, because it just wouldn't work out. Davison Figueiredo would just get laid on. There's too big a size disparity there for that to really be that fun. You need to ratchet it up a couple of weight classes, get like a featherweight in there. Like Max Holloway's kind of big enough to maybe make that a little bit interesting. What you do, it doesn't matter the fighters. I've got preferences. You could pick one or two. One simple thing. Nut shots are legal. You have a fight. All groin strikes are totally legal. If you want to open it up for eye pokes as well, just really take it back, all the way back. Get that Keith Hackney just going for it. It'll change the dynamic. We don't have to deal with the referees, you know, calling things and stopping the action. We just let it run. It's fine. It's beautiful. You can make it that just a 2-on-1, so the one guy can just kick one dude low and then have 1-on-1. It's perfect.
Wow. All right. So we have like an actual MMA fight between the flyweight champion and the tallest heavyweight in the UFC. And then we have a fight where we just throw all the rules out the window. Maybe eye gouges, but nut shots are okay.
I've got 12 seconds left. It can be stand and bang rules. That was on the game. or as I like to call them, Dan Quinn rules. No kicks, no takedowns.
I would accept his answer if we did Stefan Struve versus Davison Figueiredo in the kick fight only rule set, because that was maybe the best part about Cam Soda.
I think Davison Figueiredo would probably manage his range better than Stefan Struve in that fight.
Wow. Just one room is just right there for him, though. Lights out.
Guys, the timer ran out. Come on.
This is the best episode ever. Casey, now you get to take us on home. Who is walking out of the virtual cage with the BTL strap?
Well, I'm putting my imagination cap on, and I'm visualizing it right now. Oh, man, Stefan Struve versus Figueiredo. I'm actually combining both answers. So I just see Figueiredo actually headbutting Stefan Struve in the groin the whole
time. Headbutts are legal.
Headbutts are legal. Man, both are amazing answers. I have a winner winning the last round by 10 to 9.5. The half point system still rules. And new!
Oh!
Zamuño's Edgar decision.
Yeah. I won't lie, that was. That last one was a tough one because I love your answer, Sean.
Yeah.
That was the first thing I was interested in doing on that video game. I was like, all right. And it took me 8 attempts to beat Stefan Struve stand and bang mode with Mighty Mouse Johnson. I was ashamed of myself.
I love the answer. I do think that, like, if we actually did it, it wouldn't work out that well. But
sure.
It's a great answer, but I've just always, you guys ever see the, like, Kenny Florian, like, College Humor video, the All Balls Brawl? it's just great, and I've always wanted to just, like, yeah, let's just let nutshots happen. It's fine. Change the dynamic of the sport entirely.
Before we give Jed his 30 seconds, Casey, I have to know, why did you lean with Jed here?
It was like I said, I was combining both of them. So I was seeing Figueiredo versus Struve, but then I only saw headbutts and punches to Stefan Struve's groin area. So in the end, the groin shots that won me over. Sorry.
Groin shots are funny. It doesn't matter if you're 6 or 65. Like, yeah. They're just funny.
Well, if you do that, you got to bring back Keith Hackney. You got to throw him in there with somebody.
Chet Congo versus Keith Hackney was the fight that I was thinking in my head of the two most notorious groin strikers in MMA history.
It is amazing how much of a good guy baby face he has become in the years that followed that just absolute racking of a ball sack because of how bad of a person Joe Sun was. That man is a hero.
Yes. He's great. It's like the best gif in MMA history, too. Just, it's awesome.
And we can bring Gary Goodridge back too with the peanut butter. Remember that?
Gary Goodridge. I haven't thought of Gary Goodridge in a long time.
Right? Just John Hess. Give me some John Hess.
Wow. Who knew Kevin Burns was not going to be the most esoteric reference on this episode?
So for years, I didn't know anything about technique in MMA, and I rented UFC 5 from the video store. And when I saw John Hess, I was like, how could anybody ever beat him? Because I was so little. I was like 9 years old. I was like, how could anybody ever beat him? Then I find that 144p quality video of him in Brazil and Vitor Belfort just slaughtering him. And it is so satisfying.
Oh, the good old days of MMA.
I know. We're trying to bring it back here on the program. But Jed, you are back in the driver's seat as the champion. You get 30 seconds to talk about whatever it is you want to talk about, good, bad, and different, because I smell a trilogy matchup coming sooner rather than later.
You know, if a trilogy happens, I'll accept those terms. You know, Sean was generous enough to give me a rematch, and so I only can do the same. And we all know that Jose Youngs is never going to fight me. Man is running for his life, so I'll happily do step into the cage anytime. Well, with whatever time I have left, I just want to say that Cam Soda is legitimately one of my favorite things in the sport. It's ridiculous. It is borderline immoral, but it's great because somehow they do find ways to make things entertaining that just shouldn't be. And I think it's okay to let the top button go a little bit, have some fun with our MMA. And look, on Saturday night, they did a 2-on-1 fight, which is ridiculous in its own measure. And then after the one guy got submitted in about 90 seconds, he was fine. He stood up and was like, I want to run it back. Can we just do it again? And they just said, yeah. And they immediately fought again in the ring. Like, they just did it again. Like, the two guys went back to their corner. He went back to his. And they were just like, all right, let's do it again. The exact same thing happened. It was amazing. Like, Cam Soda is so great in the most ridiculous way. I'm well over my time, but I love it so much. And I hope the next time they have an event, I can be there in person.
I have a headache right now from laughing so hard over this last 50 minutes or so. Sean, any final thoughts this week?
First off, guys, check out Fightful MMA. Shaquille Majuri is doing some great stuff over there. And Fightful.com, we do really good at the wrestling stuff. The Cam Soda thing, that's something that when it happens in wrestling, I'm like, nobody would allow that. Nobody would allow people to compete back-to-back like that. But I will close out by reading you the last passage in John Hess's Wikipedia page. It says, quote, John is also a secret 87-time champion at his own SAFTA dojo in Glasgow, where he's beaten, has an unbeaten record of 3,000-0 against local junkies. His most infamous fight was a brutal beatdown of Steven Seagal at a local buffet, which ended when the Bess trapped Seagal in a guillotine, which led to Seagal defecating in his fishy pants.
I forgot John Hess was a SAFTA guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That is actually on his Wikipedia.
Out of that whole thing, all you took out of that was, I forgot he was a SAFTA guy. I forgot what Steven Seagal pooped
in his pants. It used to be one of my favorite things about watching the old UFC is just like, what kind of fighter are you? And it was always some dude trying to brand his own thing. Just be like, I'm a full combat fighter or whatever. SAFTA. Like,
oh my God, what? This 200-0 fighter just lost for the first time. This is huge. Yes. Every card.
Over more than 200 street fights. Okay, cool. Cool, cool.
The guy that got beat up, Taylor Tooley, he was in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. I was like, why do I recognize this guy slaughtering a pig? I'm like, oh, I watched him get slaughtered on like the first UFC ever.
Taylor Tooley is like responsible for the UFC in general. Do you know that,
yeah.
Sean?
Yeah.
Do you know that story?
Yeah. I don't know that. I just know that him getting head kicked by Gordeaux was really awesome.
Oh, so before the night before they were having the event, they did a fighters meeting and things broke out because everybody very quickly realized that the rules were aggressively rigged in the Gracie favor and was like, this is trash. And they were yelling about it. And then Taylor Tooley just like finished his beer. I was like, I'm going to go fight tomorrow. Bye. And he walked out of the room. And so everybody else felt their manhood had been condemned.
That is amazing.
So he's like responsible that the first event went like happened in general because the night before was very much up in the air.
And now he's on Magnum PI.
Is he?
Wait, yes.
I have no idea.
Fun fact, he was an extra in the original Magnum PI, like when he was, I think when he was a teenager, and now he's on the new show, like all the time.
They made that like a continuous character, and they just did a flashback to him because, what are they doing?
Yeah, I think he's on a lot of like Hawaii-based stuff, like obviously Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Hawaii 5-0, and I think there was something else too, but he's been on quite a few things.
That makes him more successful than like 95% of fighters. So
yeah.
Way to go, Taylor.
He had a better acting career than Ronda Rousey did.
Well, she's got time yet. I've seen WWE movies. Just, they're waiting. Roadhouse is coming. The Roadhouse remake is coming. Just you wait.
It doesn't get much better than that. We even got some MMA history lessons to close out the show. So thank you all so much for watching. We'll be back once again next week. We'll do it all over again right here between the links. For Jed Meshew, Sean Rossap, the judge, E. Casey Lydon, also on the production side, crushing it. Big shout out to Esther Lynn on the intro and on the graphics. I am Mike Heck. We'll see ya. Have a great week, everybody.
Love you guys.
This has been Between the Links with your host, Mike Heck. Brought to you by MMA Fighting, a production of Vox Media.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.